On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we will break down Anthony Joshua's performance over Jermaine Franklin. What's left of AJ? Will he take on Fury? Will he fight in the summer against maybe Dillian White? The good, the bad, the ugly from Anthony Joshua, as well as the featherweight division. So Rebessi Ramirez pick up a world title. What's next for him and the featherweight division as a whole? Let's go. What is up, everybody? Welcome in to another episode of Inside Boxing Live, a nice round number, episode 220. I am Dan Canobio. He is the former world champion, Chris Algieri, fresh off of his call of Anthony Joshua over Jermaine Franklin in a nice cozy studio with Todd Grisham. How was the experience, Chris? You're back home, but how was it?
First off, 220. My lucky number is 2. Born on March 2nd, so... 2-2-2. I like twos. But yeah, no, always a pleasure to work with Todd. He's phenomenal to work with. The issue with Todd is what happens after the work is done, and you get
what you guys
around.
Get into. That's what I really want to know. Forget Joshua. Ooh. What did you and Grisham get into in Miami?
We are legendarily the dynamic duo, Todd and I. We ran down to Miami and went to the Karate Combat.
That looks sick.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. A lot of famous faces there, and I ran into a bunch. So listen, people who are listening to our show and don't know, I was a former world champion kickboxer, fought on the pro circuit for.
And I wasn't, for everyone that's out there too.
If you're wondering who was the kickboxer,
Chris is the
fighter,
champion. I am just the talking head.
Right, in case you're wondering. So I ran into a lot of old friends, which was very cool, and met a lot of new friends too. Just martial arts guys that I've been out of that scene for a long time, so I got to meet a lot of the fighters. So that was very cool.
So your picture with Hector Lombard, legend of the MMA. I didn't realize he had a million followers on Instagram. He's like an OG, right?
I still don't know that. Thank you for letting me know that. Super nice guy. Yeah. First time I had met him other than being in a gym. So, you know, we just had quick highs and buys, you know, whatever, hellos in gyms and whatnot. So, like, we actually got to hang and talk for a bit. And my boy Jarrell Miller was in there, who I've known since I was literally a teenager. So, when I get flack online about Jarrell Miller, I'm like, he is literally somebody I know for 20 years. But
he put out a video after the Joshua fight, kind of like talking trash, like, I want you next. Did you guys talk about that at all?
Yeah, I mean... from the performance last night, which we're going to get into, I mean, Jarrell's got a real shot to win that fight.
A lot of people want Joshua. I think he has a massive target on his back because he represents a huge, massive payday, and he's very beatable. But yes, we will get into that. Before we get into that, Chris, we have a new partner here on the show. I think this is right up your alley. You are the fighter from the Fighter's Kitchen. You fancy yourself as a chef. HelloFresh is now working with us at Inside Boxing Live. And HelloFresh takes the hassle out of mealtime this spring by delivering pre-proportioned ingredients and easy-to-prepare recipes right to your door. Skip the checkout lines because HelloFresh has dinner covered for you tonight. HelloFresh keeps your taste buds on their toes with 40 recipes and over 100 seasonal and convenience items to choose from each week. You can spend less time in the kitchen with quick and easy meals like HelloFresh's fast and fresh pineapple chicken tacos. Sounds amazing. Falafel Power Bowls, ready in 15 minutes or less. I like that part. Because some of these meal kits out there, they take way too long. I don't have enough time for all that. The whole point is for it to be quick. 15 minutes or less with some of their Power Bowls and all these other items that HelloFresh is bringing out. No worries if you're not a pro in the kitchen. So you're the pro in the ring. You're the pro in the kitchen. I am neither of which. HelloFresh's foolproof recipes arrive pre-proportioned and easy to prepare in just a few steps. They sent us some stuff. I made some pork loin last week. Very easy. I made some curry chicken soup. It was delicious. What did you make?
I got some chicken stuff that I'm kind of upset that you got pork loin. So I had my first delivery from HelloFresh last week. It was awesome. Everything is pre-packaged. It's literally idiot proof for you guys who are not into cooking. Like I'm a big, I like to cook. You called me a chef. I would never call myself a chef. I do like to cook. I'm
pretty close,
good in the kitchen.
Man.
I'm pretty good.
Those Instagram pics.
Yeah, I mean,
feel like I'm eating like an idiot.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a lot of angling and lighting, but there you know, go. That's neither here nor there. Yours. But yeah, no, HelloFresh makes it super easy. So it's like I said, it's idiot proof. Everything comes pre-packaged, pre-measured, ready to go. Super fast too. It's so convenient. And also, I mean, grocery shopping sucks. So you get all the ingredients involved in the box. Everything comes fresh. It's cool. It's ready to work. I mean, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Much more than I expected.
Yeah, it's really good food, good ingredients. And the best part about it is, like, if you work a 9 to 5 and you get home, like, for me, the hardest part is I'm constantly at the grocery store. I feel like after work, I'm stopping at the grocery store, which just adds an extra half hour, 45 minutes to me getting home. Like, having, like, meals, like, in my fridge that are, like, really good and, like, ready to go. So when I get home, I can just cook it up and then like watch the Yankee game or whatever. That's huge. So go to HelloFresh.com/boxing50 and use code boxing50 for 50% off. That is a really good deal with boxing50 plus your first box ships free. That's HelloFresh.com/boxing50 and start using America's number one meal kit today. Okay, let's get into the fights. Let's get into what we saw this weekend. You were on the call, like we said, with Todd Grisham. Anthony Joshua, unanimous decision win. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's start off by playing a little game. The good and the bad. Let's say something good, because we're going to get to the bad. I thought his jab looked extra snappy, and it looked the best it's ever looked. You go.
It did for the first 8 rounds.
Okay.
It was very fast, very sharp, very snappy for Thursday rounds. He started pawing it a little bit in those middle rounds. He brought it back in the last couple of rounds. Super sharp. I like him at 255. So the good. I like him at 255. He looked good. He looked fit. Also, his conditioning looked great.
Yes.
Even late into the fight, he didn't look tired in the corner, which we've seen in the past. So in terms of that, I liked it. In terms of certain things that listen, I'm going to speak praises about Derek James regardless of the performance, but I think that some of those things that they were probably working on was shown. I think he could have done more. He showed his punch variation was good. I'd want him to throw more combination. Oh, we're talking about the good. Punch variation was good. I saw a jab. I saw a right hand. I saw the overhand right. I saw the left hook. I saw uppercuts. So I saw every punch in the arsenal, which we haven't seen a lot of in recent years. And I think he's got one of the best right uppercuts, that rear up hand uppercut, which is what knocked out Klitschko in the game. And I haven't seen that in recent years. He brought a lot of that back. Also the good, Jermaine Franklin can fight.
He's good.
Dude. I mean, I was saying that I knew going into it, I knew he's a good fighter. We've been following for, like, we're New York guys. We've been following him on the New York circuit for a while. Mm-hmm. He's had less than amazing performance, sterling performances against some guys that he probably should have beaten by way easier than he did. But he comes in shape. He looked good. He had that New York style of moving his head, slipping. His jab was phenomenal. He had Joshua's nose bleeding in round one. He had a bloody mess in round two. Yeah. Cracked. It was a jab. It was a left jab. He had a very sharp jab. I think he showed that he belongs on the world stage. So I'll give him that. And listen, that's props to Joshua as well. I think it was easy at the end of the fight to be like, well, Joshua should with this. Jermaine Franklin fought really, really well and is a good fighter and is probably going to beat a lot of these top guys or at least give them good fights.
I thought Franklin was just a little outgunned. You know, obviously, yeah. Giving up so much in talent and reach and weight,
size,
and,
speed, size, athleticism,
everything. And also, like, he came in really good shape, but he gassed out towards the end, did a lot of holding. Jab was good early. That's pretty much all he has, though. He did crack Joshua with a few good shots. Another good for Josh was that Franklin's not known for his punching power, but he did land a few flush combinations that the zone calls.
Tricky shots.
What's that?
I'm saying tricky shots. Shots that Joshua wasn't really seeing, and those are the ones that really hurt you. So
he landed some good shots, and I was flipping back and forth between your guys' call, and I had the direct stream from the zone of the guys they had there. They were just simply not acknowledging anything Franklin was doing. It's hilarious. They just are very homers. Homerism. It happens in all promotions and all networks, but it's extra like blatant.
That certainly wasn't the case with Todd and I.
No, because I like that. So I kept going back to your guys' call, even though it was like 15 seconds behind to get like, all right, now I want to know what's really going on in the fight. But to echo some of your things on the good, like we talk about the jab, it kept him in the fight and pretty much won him the fight because the combinations were few and far between. And the 255, I was like, oh, why is he coming at 255? I thought he used his frame like kind of like Fury does when he fights. Like he was sitting down on Franklin, tiring him out. That was a different wrinkle. We haven't really seen too much from Joshua using that big frame and sitting down. And then you said late too, he had some of his best rounds in round 9, 10, 11, 12, which, you know, coincidentally enough was when he had his really good rounds against Usyk in the rematch, came in those later rounds. So I thought those parts looked good, and it was very easy to find the bad because everyone criticizes this guy and he's obviously a shell of what he once was. But there were some good, like you bring up Derek James as well. Like it's only one fight. Like they got to spend some more time together. And he said in the post-fight presser, I'm going to go right back to Texas. I can't wait to get back there. And like, we'll see some things. And I thought James did implemented some good stuff in there. All right. So let's get to the bad, which everyone likes to talk about and find out. I'll start with, we talk about how the jab is good. The jab is also a detriment for him because he threw it 60% of the time. Like, does not throw combinations anymore.
Yeah, no, that was one of the major points that you and I were making leading up to this fight, is that he has transitioned from a KO artist to a jabber. And he used to throw more power punches percentage-wise than jabs, and now it has completely flopped. And now he throws way more jabs than he does power punches. But you're the numbers guy, I can't. But no, also, it's obvious.
Same. He threw 64% of his thrown punches in this fight were jabs, and that's what it has been since the Klitschko fight.
Yeah, and the Klitschko fight has been the checkpoint of Anthony Joshua's career.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a huge fan of Anthony for a long time, and I've screamed his praises from the rooftops on this show and on articles and interviews and whatnot. And because of the guy that he was before he fought Klitschko. The Klitschko fight was awesome. I mean, it was one of the most incredible performances I've seen. And then ever since then, it has been ho-hum. And, you know, this performance where, you know, granted he was working through a lot of things. And I think you saw that. I think you saw him working through a lot of the demons he had inside, especially early on. And I mentioned on the telecast, he looked very unsure.
Yeah.
Completely opposite of Jermaine Franklin, who knew exactly what the hell he was doing. He just couldn't execute. He couldn't. I mean, he just had too much in front of him. Mm-hmm. And Joshua was the opposite. He had somebody who was literally fighting uphill almost literally the entire night. And he just looked awkward. And then he got it in the mid to later rounds. I liked what I saw from Joshua later. He got more loose. He finally found that uppercut. He started throwing the lead uppercut. You know, so there were things that came about once he got comfortable. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of questions. And like you said, I think a lot of hawks are sitting on the rooftop looking down like, where do I get in? Because I was talking to Jarrell Miller last night. I was hanging out with him. He's, like I said, a friend of mine. We're hanging out at Karate Combat, and he wants that fight, of course. I don't know if he's going to get it. But, you know, he's saying he saw a lot of the things that we all saw.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to – we'll get to that, too, like what we think is next. But just the combination punch. Like, what happened? Like, he barely threw any combinations. Like, I was working CompuBot, so I was counting Franklin. And there's two glaring things. Like, he throws one punch at a time. A lot of thinking, like you could almost like it came through the screen so much, like it just didn't seem fluid in there. It seemed like he was really in his head, not in between styles, because this, like we just talked about, like his style has pretty much been the same for the last 12 fights. Just a lot of like thinking. And I talked to enough athletes and I played enough sports that when you are thinking out there, you're not performing at your highest level. You're thinking, like, it's not innate. You know, it's not like you watch a guy, some of these other heavyweights put together combinations, or like a Fury put together combinations, or Joe Joyce put together combinations. I just didn't see that from him. And we'll never know about the psyche, which is the last thing in terms of performance. It's like, it's hard for me to say he doesn't want to be out there, because I still think he loves it and he's going to get right back into training. But something's off, like something's off mentally. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah, I mean, and I said on the telecast, so, you know, for the people at home who are seeing some smoke, so I'm starting a new segment. It's called Sunday Cigars, but...
Here you go. Get that. Get it.
But, I think you could see him working through a lot of things on, you know, throughout the fight, especially early on. And thinking is good, but you think in camp, and it becomes muscle memory on fight night. And you don't think until you need to in a fight. And I don't think Joshua needed to in this fight. He should have gone out there. Well, I think he should have went out there, had his established dominance early, used his height, his reach, his speed, his power, all the advantages that he has and really should have put Franklin in his place early on, which is what I expected. I said he was going to knock him out early. That's what I thought. Damn, I thought he was going to get. I thought he was going to get him, and you know, 8.5 was the under, and a lot of people were thinking that. And Todd and I lost some money last night.
I lost both my bets.
Neither here nor there, but
I picked Robesi Ramirez by knockout.
I saw that. Yeah, so I mean, I did too.
Yeah, I lost those bets, but yeah, you're right. It's the thinking. Too much thinking in there.
Thinking is good, but thinking is necessary when things are not going the way you planned. And I don't really think Franklin did anything out of the ordinary or put him in a position where it's like, okay, I got to figure it out. Because that's what a world champion does. A world champion figures it out on the fly, finds a way to win. But Joshua was winning. He was winning the whole time. And those dominant guys figure out a way to get the guy out of there, yep. Figure out a way to dominate, figure out a way not to get hit. And I didn't see any of that from Joshua. He got hit more than he needed to from a much smaller guy. Granted, his quick hands, he moved his head really good. I'm gonna push against you though on the combination punching from Joshua. I think a lot of that was because of Franklin. He moves his head.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that jerky. You know, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's got some hand speed, and that's something.
The reason he's never been knocked out before.
Well, that's because his chin. The guy, I mean, the right
hand is the way he holds, the way he kind of dives in there. He has a lot of survival tactics.
He never looked that hurt, though. I was very surprised. I mean, there were shots where it looked like the back of his head touched his spine. You know, and Joshua can punch. And that was another glaring thing that I saw from Josh. We talked about the good, talked about the bad. I don't see that one punch power. You know, granted, you got a guy in front of you that's a good chin. But, I mean, Klitschko hits you with those shots. You guys are going to sleep.
Yeah.
He always did. And it wasn't that he couldn't find the spots. And that's the thing about Joshua, like, he's such a beautiful boxer. He uses that jab. It's so sharp. Mm-hmm. He timed those right hands really well on a guy who's got a sneaky head movement. Bang, and hits him and cracks him. But if it's Klitschko, who was not as smooth or athletic as Joshua is, either Klitschko, could have been Vitaly, it could have been Vladimir. Either one of those guys lands those right hands. Franklin's on canvas on his back, staring at the lights.
Yeah.
And Joshua's not that guy.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Also, too, like, if you're not a one-punch power guy anymore and you're not a combination puncher or, you know, throwing 35 punches around now, Joshua, like, what exactly are you? And what he is a boxer. He's going to jab and he's going to avoid any real exchanges. And
that's but he still gets hit.
He did get hit a bunch by a guy that wasn't a lot of power. And if he was, you know, it was Wilder, that was Fury. It was Joyce who hits pretty hard. Like, that might be another story. But I said right after the fight, it's like, all right, he'll win fights. Like, he'll beat the Jermaine Franklins of the world. But it's not going to be, like, exciting. And he's at the point of his career where he's so popular and he's so known. And, like, these, like, ho-hum victories like he had yesterday are not going to do it anymore. Like, he said it right after the fight. In 15 years, no one's going to remember this fight. Like, and I tweeted that, and so many people were like, 15 years? 15 minutes? People are going to forget about it. It's almost like after the fight was over, it's like he knows that he doesn't have that extra something anymore. But he's still going out there and doing it because he still has something to prove to himself. He's still, like, relatively young, only 33 years old, which is pretty young for a heavyweight. It's almost like it's a weird juxtaposition probably going on in his head where I know I don't have, like, that X factor anymore or that driving force, but I'm still going to go out there and fight. Money. Yes, a lot of it. So
for the people only listening at home, I'm doing the money hand signal.
The international sign language for money.
Because they were talking about, what do you want next? He went right to Tyson Fury.
Right, that was funny. The broadcaster was like, I think it was that guy Aide. He was like, really? Who do I want next? And he's like, and the guy was like, Fury. Right, he didn't even like take the listen to what the crowd said. Like, they had that pre-planned. Like, Fury.
Mm-hmm.
Fury is, they're making it no secret. Like, that's a fight. And we talked about this in the lead up. We said, if Anthony Joshua doesn't get a knockdown, let alone a knockout, like, are we still going to be wanting to see him in the biggest fights? Yes, we're still going to want to see him in the biggest fights because he's still a name. And there's only X amount of – it's only top four in the heavyweight division. And they still haven't fought each other yet. Like AJ said yesterday, we're not getting any younger. So now we'll go to what's next. Like, I'm not even going to ask you if he can beat Fury, because I don't think there's any chance that he can beat him outside of what he said, what happened to him from Marie is a punch from the gods. Like, what should he do next, Anthony Joshua?
I mean,
what should Anthony Joshua do next?
So I'm being a little more optimistic than you in terms of, does Joshua have another gear? Does he have another life in his career? Because I'm looking back at Klitschko's career, because I've been thinking about this a lot the past however many hours we are past the fight, you know, 24
yet.
Yeah, not even 24. We're 17, 18 hours
as we're recording this at 4:42.
Yeah, by the time you guys see this. Yeah. So I've been thinking a lot about this fight and his career, and I'm looking back through, you know, the Klitschko fight, and that's why I brought up the Klitschko fight, because I've looked at his career since then. Klitschko had a really rough patch, if people who are not like real boxing guys that remember. Yeah, I mean, he lost to Lehman Brewster. Got knocked out by Lehman Brewster.
Corey Sanders knocked him down.
Corey Sanders knocked him out in two rounds. Yep. And there was a point where we were really worried because his gas tank was just not there and it didn't make sense. He just got super gassed and super tired. His chin was no good. And then he had the Samuel Peter fight the first time.
Yeah.
And he got rocked all over the place.
Boxing after dark.
Right. Rocked all over the place. Was holding to get to the end. Gets the decision. Mm-hmm. Fights him again a couple years later and knocks his block off. And that's what I mean. There could potentially be a resurgence if they can just figure out that style. And I think some of the things he was doing last night, which is not pretty, the holding, missing the jab, grab behind the head, pull him down, uppercut him, bang, you know, which you start to figure out later on, which is something that's not pretty. It's not boxing. It's not. Klitschko made that his career. Right. 1-2, boom, boom, grab you, hold, drop your weight on you, boom, push you off. Joshua's a big heavyweight. He's 255, athletic. He's fast. He's got that good jab. Bing, bing, leans on you, drops, pulls, whatever. But you got to finish, guys. You can't do that and win decisions. Like you said, he turned into a boxer. He does that and he starts starching guys late. We'll let him pass if he gets more comfortable doing that. I think comfortability is the biggest thing, and that's what Klitschko had to overcome as well. He was very uncomfortable with heavyweights in front of him late in fights or even mid rounds in fights when they got too heated. He controlled the pace really well. He figured that out, and then he became one of the most dominant guys we've ever seen for another decade after he had that rough patch. If Joshua can do that, if he can pull from that page, that playbook, and become the guy that we all expected him to be and that everyone around him expected him to be, then, you know, there's still a chance. But
we're still otherwise, saying if, and like, who is this resurgence coming against? Is he's not going to have a resurgence against Tyson Fury. I'm not going to have a resurgence against Deontay Wilder. I think at this point in the game, Joe Joyce gives him all the trouble in the world. I would probably favor Joe Joyce right now over Anthony Joshua. I don't know where you stand on that, but that was an interesting question out there. But what I mean is, like, he's calling for the biggest fights, and he's 33. He can beat the Jermaine Franklins of the world for the next 5 years if he really wants to. But, like, I feel like time is running out. Like, he's not going to beat Fury with this style.
Time is not necessarily running out. I think he has that in his mind. And I would have much preferred him say, hey, I need another fight with Derek James. I need to work through my style a little more. I need to get my footing again. And then we're going to look for the big fights. For
that's
him going
to happen. He's not going
to. When
fight
he
Fury
said, next. I'm going, I want Fury next. I was like, bad.
But
call.
They always do that. They just say that. And then
no, they don't always do that. And that,
it
and that
fizzles. It'll fizzle.
Yeah. I mean,
charged up right after a fight. What is he going to come out and say? He's not going to come out and say, I want another tune-up. He'll say
no, he should
what
say, he should say what he said going into the fight was that I need to knock this guy out or I'm not satisfied. He should go, well, I didn't knock him out. Yeah. I felt like I worked through some things. I felt like I did some things good, which he said. He looked unsatisfied. So he goes, hey, listen, I get myself a B-minus performance, C+, just like what I said on air. And they go, I need to go back to drawing board. I need another camp with Derek James. I'm going right back to Texas, which he's already said. He posted today. He was in a sauna. He goes, 12 light rounds last night. Right back to Texas. You'll see me this summer. Cool. I like that.
It's not going to be Fury, but I don't think.
No, definitely not. But you know, Dillian White? Probably.
Does he beat Dillian White? I think that's like turns into an interesting fight now.
It does.
Hated
it
coming in. We both hated it. It's like, why are we building towards a Dillian White fight? But now we see why. It's because Joshua, once again, is going through a metamorphosis with a new trainer and trying to find that dog, which is clearly not there anymore. So, I mean, probably Dillian Whyte next.
I like Dillian Whyte. I like him as a fighter. I like him as a person. I don't want to take any money out of anybody's bank account. I don't really care to see that fight.
Right. I don't want to see it either. Like, I would love to see a Fury. I would love to see a Wilder versus Joshua. A Joyce versus Joshua.
New blood. New blood.
I
don't want to see that either.
I touched myself out of that. But it's based. That's what I mean. It's like really only top five guys. Like, it's Fury. It's Fury. It's Wilder. It's Joyce in that order for me. Who I would like to see him fight next. Can he beat any of those guys? Not next. But then again, like, the dude's 33. Like, what are we waiting for here? Another new trainer and all this, but that's what I mean, where it's running out of time. It's running out of time because of the name of who he is and the figure of who he is. Anthony Joshua.
We said that they're probably going to run through some of the British heavyweights, which Dillian White's one of the better ones. Joe Joyce is there. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Dillian Whyte in the summer. We saw Joe Joyce in the fall, early winter. And then we start talking about Fury in May of 2024.
Fury will be retired six times by then.
And we'll have pulled out of multiple fights with Usyk. And,
I don't know what Fury's going to do next. Usyk looks like he's fighting Dubois. Even though Wilder leapfrogged someone in the WBA rankings without even winning a fight, which is hilarious. WBA, love the WBA. How about Gilberto Mendoza putting out a tweet before the fight? May the best man win, but I want it to be Anthony Joshua. The president of an organization, like just blatant. That's the way to do it, I guess. Just don't even let it be known. And also,
don't pretend.
Yeah, don't pretend. Like, I actually respect that more than pretending. What's also funny on this, along the same ilk, Tony Bellew scoring basically every single round for Joshua and then trying to fight Franklin's team right after the fight is hilarious to me. One of the funniest, just like blatant in your face, like, I love Joshua, I love Matchroom. The most like not unbiased, or showing bias, I should say, guy out there. Hilarious. I heard you say this on the thing yesterday. It's impossible to score and call the fight at the same time.
Yeah, no. I mean, you can't do it. You have to literally, if you're judging a fight, and people at home are not going to get this because I've been raked over the coals before about scoring a fight while calling a fight. It's impossible. No, I've been one other person. It's been me and one other person calling a fight, and I have to score it and read the scores and count them up while talking to the audience live.
Right, and you have the producer in your ear. They're talking a million miles a minute.
That's another thing that people don't understand. Absolutely impossible to do. But, I mean, it was funny because I love Tony, but he gave the 11th round to Franklin, some late round, and I was like,
he gave a token round to Franklin.
Right, and I was giving nothing up until that point. I'm like, well, I would have given Franklin some rounds earlier. I definitely didn't give him that one. Dude, I still didn't give Franklin all the rounds.
No, I mean, would say Franklin won three tops, but it was just
tops.
So
I gave
funny.
Him two.
Like, Ballou has like this reputation of being like a company man. Like, he was in Matchroom his whole life. Him and Eddie Hearn are super close, and he's very tight with Joshua. And obviously, Joshua was a Matchroom lifer. But just to see that scorecard come up on the screen, basically a shutout. And then the fight's over and he's looking to get into it with Franklin's, like, that's embarrassing in a way. Like, come on, man. Like be a professional. Like, don't do that. it just shows the whole UK, man. They're just a whole nother, like, they're just like such a, like, it's a team. It's odd to watch from this side of the pond.
Yeah. It's very different. It's a lot more dog eat dog over here, but, I mean, speaking of what you're talking about in terms of over there, but the co-main event in terms of that stoppage, that was one of the worst stoppages I've seen in quite some time. I mean, the Fabio Wardley and Michael Coffey's a capable guy. Yeah, he wasn't throwing a lot of punches. It was the first time there was an exchange in the fight and the ref stops it, and Coffey literally pushed the ref. I don't like putting hands on officials, but I get it. You know, he was like, what are you doing? I'm totally fine. Rolling with a lot of those shots because Coffey does have that little kind of shoulder roll. He had hand down, whatever. Guy with some big ones at the end, but I mean, he was completely fine. Never wobbled, dude. Never hurt in the fight.
That was one of the worst stoppages I've seen in the last 10, 15 years. A guy like Michael Coffey, like, he's a B-side. He's a guy that has to come out there and put together good performances so he can get another paycheck. He wasn't in there to specifically win the fight. Odds were against him. And someone
if he could have, though, he would have. And Coffey's one of those guys. If he give him, if he had a chance to win, he'd go for it.
Didn't let him cook. He pulled the plug on him before he can cook. Like, come on. I know Fabio Wardley's like the guy over at Matchroom they're trying to build up. I think he's highly overrated. Don't think he's that great. But that was a bad stoppage because he threw like a 15-punch combination. Barely any of them landed, number one. Number two, previous to that exchange, was Coffey even remotely buzzed? Was he even hit with anything flush?
So he got hit with shots, but took them all well.
Right? Usually when you see a stoppage, it's because a guy has been taking punishment up until that point, and the ref is doing what the corner won't, or putting him, you know, taking it out of the fighter's hands and trying to protect the fighter. That was a premature stoppage. It was so blatant what they were doing there. It's like, we need Wardley to come out of here with a W. Get a few
Todd and I freaked out about it, and I'm like, we're kind of looking at each other. He's like, that was bad. I'm like, yeah, that was really bad. I'm like, I wonder if they think it was bad over there. I wonder what the rest of the world. And then we saw kind of everyone on Twitter was it was terrible stoppage.
Yeah. Universally panned as a horrible stop. I don't know what exactly they said on the Zone UK broadcast.
I watched it later, and it was, they said it was a little early. They didn't push it.
There's no way.
It was wildly early.
It was crazy. I've never seen anything like that. Like, Coffey should be pissed off, man. He should get another matchup. Should give him another shot. That was the undercard. It wasn't much on the undercard of this fight.
Very weak undercard.
But to sum up Anthony Joshua, we'll see what's next. Like, the Fury thing is interesting because it's a huge fight. It's still a big fight over in the UK. Does it have some of the shine that it did a few years ago when they were both champions? No. But they are getting up there in age, and I do think they have to fight. All these guys have to fight before it's this generation close to the book on this generation of heavyweights.
But Dan, let me ask you, do the handlers of Joshua think, okay, let's build up that fight. Let's get him a couple more Jermaine Franklins of the world and then get his confidence and then he can go into that fight. Or do you go, I can't have him losing to a Jermaine Franklin.
Yes.
Do we go right to Fury and cash out?
Go right into it, man. They should have done that right the minute he lost to Ruiz. I think a lot of the shine was off this guy. And
you got to give him a chance. You got to give him a chance.
You
got to
protect your investment. I understand that he's the biggest part of Matchroom still. But all right, how we're gonna keep building him up and building him up? Like, eventually, that something's gonna happen where the fight's not gonna where it can't happen, where it's out of our hands, it's out of their hands, and they're gonna say, "Wow, we really squandered." Still anything what's left of this fight. And I think if you're Fury's camp, of course you're going to want this fight. He'll make so much more for fighting Joshua than he will for fighting Usyk. And it's a more winnable fight.
You're talking about Fury?
Fury's going to make so much more money fighting Joshua than he is fighting Usyk.
Honestly, I think I'd rather... in terms of value, in terms of watching value as a fan, I'd rather see Fury and Joshua than Usyk and Fury. Yeah, I think in terms of history, legacy, Fury Usyk is important. But yeah, in terms of watchability, ticket sales, event, Joshua Fury is massive.
Massive. Get the Saudis back
90,000 people involved.
Right,
yeah.
Obviously that fight belongs at Wembley because they are the two biggest names of this generation, especially in the UK, heavyweight division. I still want to see Joshua versus Wilder. I thought that was had some traction over in the UK. Over in Saudi. I thought that's why Wilder was there during the Paul fight was to talk about that. I don't know. This heavyweight division, will drive you nuts. 5 years ago, I was very excited about it because there were all these new faces. Wilder, we're out of the Klitschko era. We got Wilder. We got Fury back. Joshua bursts on the scene. Usyk jumps up to heavyweight, but, we've only got X amount of matchups between them, and we're running out of time, running out of daylight here.
In the totality of the boxing history, you could use the words synonymously, boxing and heavyweight division.
Yeah.
When you said the heavyweight division drives you nuts, boxing drives you nuts.
The heavyweight division, because we've talked about this numerous times.
We had a dead decade with the heavyweight division where we didn't have that wasn't the premier, which was great because it allowed the rest of the world to understand how good the lighter divisions were.
Floyd Mayweather just shined.
Yeah. for the majority of boxing history, the heavyweight division was everything. You know, the Jack Dempsey eras, the Jack Johnson eras, you know, like the Ali era, you know, so you're always like, oh, it's heavyweights, heavyweights, heavyweights. That's what you talk about when you talk about boxing. We've had a resurgence of that recently. We've got these kings, you know, these the Wilder, the Fury, the Joshua. I mean, the Usyk now comes out of nowhere. But like you have these guys, and we've missed that for a long period of time. And when the heavyweight division is healthy, boxing is healthy. And that's why I say you can use those words synonymously in terms of boxing and the heavyweight division.
Yeah, but look at the matchups. We've only had
Usyk, they're not happening.
Only Usyk has fought Joshua, and only Wilder's fought Fury.
But that's boxing. That's my point.
Yeah,
that's my point. Look at the welterweight division. We got Spence and Crawford, who are two both undeniably top five pound for pound guys in the same weight class, and they're both undefeated.
They're talking. How does that happen? They're talking again.
I'm sure they are.
You know, the every day that goes by that Spence Thurman is not announced is one day we are closer to a Crawford Spence fight.
That might have been a smart move on the Spence team to be like, oh, we're going to go fight Thurman at 54. Like, that really shook up everything.
You'd think it would shook up a guy like Crawford, but I ain't trying to get into all that right now. But what he thinks about his
That's a whole nother show.
Right, yeah. So maybe in the back end of 2023, we see Joshua Fury, we see Spence Crawford. But in the meantime, we have good fights. Over on ESPN, Robesi Ramirez picked up
world champion now.
Workman-like win over Isaac Dogbe. I picked Robesi by knockout. He did not deliver me a parlay win. Neither did Joshua. I picked Joshua by knockout. But it's not always about that, Chris. It's about what happens in the ring. Outpoints Dogbe. I'll ask you this. Who's the best featherweight in the world right now?
So
pretty wide open division. Four different champions. Zero consolidation of the belts. You got,
who we got? We got.
You got Mauricio Lara.
Oof.
World champ.
Stud.
You got Lee Wood. They just announced that they're fighting again May 27th.
I was surprised. I thought Mick Conlon was going to get the Lara fight, but
Conlon's fighting Luis Alberto Lopez, who was the IBF champion, on the same day,
tough
May
fight.
27th.
Very tough fight.
You got Emmanuel, not Navarrete. You got the guy that Navarrete fought
is at 30 now.
You got the guy that just fought Oshaki Foster at 130. He's going back down. Ray Vargas,
yeah.
It's a fun division. You got a guy like Josh Warrington, who I don't think he's at the top. But out of those guys right there, you know, Robesi Ramirez, Mauricio Lara, Luis Alberto Lopez, Mick Conlon.
I think Lara's the guy right now.
Yes.
I think Robesi is the future.
Yeah.
But I'm still, dude, I know you didn't love his performance, but Dogbe is, he's a tough out. Even when he's in there, he was getting hit with big shots. He comes right back, and he hit Robesi with some good shots, which I'm happy to see Robesi take those shots, come right back the way he did, let his hands go. We always know I love combination punchers. And he was letting his hands go at periods, especially when he got clipped. I do believe Robesi, dude, what does he have? How many fights does he have now? What is his record?
I have it right here. He is 13-1.
Yeah, he's got less than 15 fights, and he's a world champion now, which is incredible.
I forgot about Brandon Figueroa. He's good.
He's very good. Brandon's very good.
He belongs in the top five. I would say Lara right now, if you're going off what he's done for me lately. He's the guy. He's got vicious power. Just beat Lee Wood, who was probably in the top three.
We talked at length about Lara in terms of his what he's done recently. And like he hasn't lost since, you know, what was it, 2018 or 20, yeah. Whatever. He hasn't lost since then. And since then, he's been on absolute tear.
Yeah,
and he's
young.
You got
to go Lara 1. Lara 1.
Lara's right now.
Robesi 2. I put Luis Alberto Lopez 3.
Yes.
Ray Vargas 4. Like Ray Vargas and Lee Wood like tied for 4th.
It's and hard then, to see. We got to see Ray Vargas rebound. We got to see what happens. Yeah, back at the way. He's very big.
We put him there out of like, you know, career achievement. Like
we put him there out of respect.
Yeah,
out of respect for what he's
done.
He
was undefeated. And then
undefeated at that
Figueroa,
weight class.
Brandon Figueroa has to round it out of 5. Then you have guys like Maxayo, Warrington. Oh, Mick Conlon, I think, is looking right in on it. You know,
I think those guys are all plus 5. Those are all past the top 5. I think I would probably put Figueroa above Ray Vargas.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen what he's done recently. But yeah, I'm looking at Lara number 1, Robesi number 2.
Figueroa
number
3.
3, Figueroa, then Ray Vargas.
Then Lee Wood.
And then 5. I don't know. I don't think Lee's going to get past Lara.
Well, it's fun now. We're going through this exercise right here. Like this, I wish all divisions were kind of like this. I always said that it's better to have some parity where guys get interchangeable rather than one dominant figure in the division. What do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's why you and I both hate pound for pounds, because, you know, I think it's like it's all discussion. It's what have you done for me lately? And it changes day to day. And even when if we have a fight next Saturday and you ask me who I think is going to win today, it's probably going to change, you know, a couple times before I get to
next Saturday. Is it better to have, and I think of a division, it's better to have one ruler who everyone's going after, or have like the belts change hands and have like interchangeable parts in a division, but it doesn't have like a dominant guy? I think of like the 154 pound division before Charlo became the guy there. Those belts were being switched around like crazy. Because there wasn't like one guy, like J-Rock had it for a little bit, Hurd had it for a little bit, Charlo had it for a little bit.
Yeah, I think you and I are going to disagree on this.
There's one guy at the top.
I like a dominant champion, and everyone's working towards fighting him. Classic, old school.
I think both are fun. I think I'd probably... Yeah.
The way you're talking about it, that's like UFC, right? UFC is like, there's either a super dominant champion who stays there for a long time, or they're flipping belts every.
Well, I think that's because of the nature of the sport too. It's a little more.
Correct. Like, yes.
Smaller gloves. 100%.
Comparing the two sports is, and there's also so many ways to win, but I like dominant champions who rule a division, and then everyone's working their way towards that guy. Cause I like that. I want to beat the champion. Like a lot of guys won world titles on vacant titles. I beat the champion. I beat Ruslan Provodnikov. He was the world champion. He had, you know, he had won it dominantly against the guy who was the world champion.
Yep.
You know, I like that. I don't like matching up and these are the two best. Let's figure out who the champion. Well, listen, we've been fighting for, boxing's been going around for a long time. Why is that belt not with someone?
Yeah.
So I like when guys are dominant and then you got to work your way up to it. And then you get the passing of the guard too. You get the young guy who works his way up, works up the rankings the hard way, gets his title shot, wins at Eliminator, which Eliminators are basically world title fights. You're fighting guys who are literally world class. Mm-hmm. You beat that guy, and then boom, you get the title fight, you get the shot, you're going up the mountain, you know, you're sieging the castle.
And no, I love that.
That's
the beauty of sport. That's the beauty of competition. I think both are good. I think to have a little, some divisions that have like the featherweight division where it's, I mean, they don't really have a dominant guy in there yet.
Open,
like Lara can prove that over time. Only scary thing about the featherweight division, you got Lara who fights on Matchroom. You got Vargas, who I think is a PBC guy. You got Luis Alberto Lopez, who fought his last fight on the Zone. His next fight's on ESPN Plus against Conley.
He's been a top rank, basically a B-side.
Right. And then you got Figueroa, who fights on PBC. You got Lee Wood, who's on Matchroom. The point I'm getting at is that a lot of these guys are on all different platforms, which makes it really hard to come together for a unification.
But I think with these guys who are not like super tip top of their divisions or their promotions, it's easier to make those fights.
Yeah. They tend to get together better.
Cause the promoter wants a belt, right? Every promoter wants the belt on their side. And once they have their belt, they can keep it amongst themselves. But until that point, like right now, like you don't have any breakout stars for any of those promotions, not even to talk about the division. So I think a lot of times you can make those fights a lot easier then when you have a dominant guy who's with one, and then you have the next dominant guy who's on another, because nobody wants to pass that belt over to another promotion. Now they're kind of open. So we have a bunch of divisions like
that.
If
Lara beats Wood again, they're talking about Warrington. Like, come on, we're just recycling fights.
Yeah, why?
Recycling.
But again, it's keeping it within the promotion. Right, that's why. Yeah.
It's what they want to do. Like, I'd love to see Mauricio Lara fight Robesi Ramirez. That's the best matchup. Right?
Lara beats, but I think it's going to take some time. I think Lara gets past Wood once again.
Yeah.
I think the Warrington makes sense because he spit on the guy after his win.
Right.
So you've got a backstory and it's within the promotion. Hopefully so that's the obvious defense for Lara. And then Robesi is going to have to beat somebody good in that meantime.
Well, if Conlon beats Lopez, you're going to see Robesi Ramirez versus Conlon.
Yes, absolutely.
Top rank. ESPN.
I think either way. I think whoever wins, Conlon,
Lopez
gets Robesi
Ramirez. That's probably safe to say. And then we have to let the chips play out with Lara and the Matchroom side.
Now that we walked it out, I kind of like the division. I like what's going to – I like where these routes are going to go because they're going to end up here. I think we're going to see the winners fight the winners, which is what boxing and competition.
Would you ever want to see a Leibold Conlon rematch? Because one end of me wants to, and the other end of me is like, I don't think it will ever be as great as the first one. So, like, let's definitely just leave that alone.
But no, I don't think we should leave it alone. I think that would be like, remember in wrestling when you had the losers bracket? I hate you saying that. You lost in the semis. You both lost in the semis. You both go into that other bracket and you're fighting for third.
Way back.
That's how I see that fight. Listen, it's a good fight. They make money. I mean, it could be a potential for another classic. Either way, there's a storyline. Yeah, good fight.
Maybe before Woods up there. He's like 34, 35.
Which was surprising. I think we kind of unleashed that on this show. And we were like, wow, he's older than we thought.
Been around for a while on that domestic scene. But damn, he's a real one, Lee Wood. Going from one tough fight
super
to the
tough
next.
Guy. God. Super tough guy. He only wants tough fights.
Right. But going from that Conlon fight to Lara when he didn't have to fight Lara. Now he's rematching Lara. It's crazy. All right. That's it for this week. A lot going on in the boxing world. Next Saturday is a marathon weekend. A lot of big fights. We'll have a show for you. Before that, Bam Rodriguez is in action. Shakur Stevenson is in action. Sebastian Fundora is in action. It's one of those days where every platform will be on, putting it on fights, getting inching closer and closer to Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis. I'm going to watch the All Access episode.
I'll be on the call before the bell of the Bam Rodriguez fight in San Antonio.
No, you're heading out to San Antonio.
Next weekend, coming out.
We're going to figure out when we're going to record next week. We'll figure that out. We'll figure it out.
We always do.
There'll be a show next week. You can guarantee it. All right, folks. That's it. Remember, always protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Goodbye.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.